The adventurers moved on, again following Risland as he used his magic to track the necromancer. While they walked, Jig pondered a new problem.
How precisely does one go about worshipping a god? Maybe I'll need a necklace like Darnix. Something with the starburst and lightning of Timulus Shadow Star instead of Earthmaker's Hammer. But what else?
In his tale, Darnak had mentioned mortals who made sacrifices to the gods in exchange for divine help. Jig tried to remember the details. There had been something about giving up one's firstborn son, and another who killed lambs, whatever they were. Jig had no son, no lamb, and he wasn't about to try to sacrifice one of the adventurers. The best he could do was smudge, and the little fire spider wouldn't make much of a sacrifice. Not that Jig would have given him up. Except for right after Smudge had burned off Jig's hair, perhaps. That left prayers.
What do you say when you pray? How do you strike up a chat with a god? I'm not even very good at starting a conversation with other goblins. Do I have to say the words out loud? Or will the god hear me in my head?
Jig decided that gods could hear your thoughts. If he had to speak the words, he'd be too embarrassed to try. To be honest, Jig didn't expect much. Goblins and gods were like goblins and every other race. There wasn't much in the way of mingling. Still, it couldn't hurt. All things considered, it would be difficult for Jig's situation to be any worse. So he began to talk in his mind as they crept through the corridors.
Timulus Shadowstar. What a clunky name. I wonder if I can get away with calling the god Tim. Probably not. My name is Jig. Can you hear me?
Jig paused. There was no answer. Then again, Darnak's conversations with Earthmaker seemed pretty one-sided as well, so it might not mean anything.
I'm wandering around lost with a dwarf, an elven child, an arrogant prince, and a wizard teetering on the edge of madness. Well, not so much teetering, more bouncing back and forth between mad and really mad. I wondered if you could help keep me alive long enough to get home in one piece.
Still nothing. Jig started to hurry after the others when inspiration hit. No goblin helped another without getting something in return. Why should gods be any different?
I don't know how worship works or anything, but if there's anything you need, I'll try to help out.
That felt better. A fair deal, just like a human would make. Jig would help Timulus Shadowstar, and the god would help Jig. He wondered what kind of favors a god might need. He hoped it would be nothing like that acorn story Darnak had told.
Hold! A door! Thief, check for traps and locks and such.
Rihanna grimaced. Remembering what had happened the last time, Jig couldn't blame her. A few more traps and she would have no fingers left.
Wait!
Jig hurried up to the door with Rihanna, to Barius's annoyance. There, he reached into his boot and retrieved the strip of meat he had been saving for later. He brushed off the dust and fuzz.
Tie your tools to this.
Jig handed the meat to Rihanna. She nodded, apparently remembering how Jig had checked the other door. With a bit of Darnak's twine, she secured her pick to the meat and probed at the keyhole. As before, a silver needle lodged in the meat. Dry and stiff the meat might be, but Jig swore he saw its color fade.
Why do you delay? Disarm the trap and open the door.
Disarm it yourself, you overdressed sheep lover.
Rihanna pulled out her knife and used the blade to bend the needle out of the way. That left only the lock itself. She stared angrily at her hands.
I wasn't very good at this even before I lost my finger.
Jig took a step back, hoping she wouldn't decide to punish the one who cost her that finger. She slid the lockpick into the keyhole and probed the mechanism of the lock. Her eyes narrowed with concentration, and her tongue tip stuck out of the corner of her mouth as she worked.
Come on, damn you!
The pick slipped from her fingers. With an icy glare at Jig, she tried again. Then a third time. She tried using the pick in her left hand, but it was no use.
I can't do it!
You did it before!
That was an easier lock! This has two tumblers instead of one, and I think there's some kind of button in the back that needs to be pressed.
Try again! We've dragged you through half this accursed place, and on the two occasions we require your help, you fail us.
I'm sorry to interfere with your great quest. Next time, bring a key instead.
Rihanna tried a vicious jab at the lock. When that still didn't work, she grabbed Jig's wrist.
Hold this.
Rihanna pressed the stronger rod into Jig's hand, keeping the slender pick for herself.
Place the bent end into the lock and twist toward me. There are two tumblers in there, and I can't get both of them at once. I'm going to try to rip the lock.
What?
It's a thieving trick. I'm going to yank the pick past the tumblers and hope it knocks them both up long enough for you to turn the lock.
Rihanna adjusted the rod in Jig's hand.
There. Like it's a key. I've got the end pressed against the button in the lock. Hold it still and keep pressing sideways. If this works, the tumblers will bounce up and you need to turn the lock before they fall.
Jig squinted, trying to bring the lock into focus in the dim light. The least Barius could do was bring the lantern closer.
Not that tight. Didn't you see how I held it before?
I don't see very well.
Oh.
Rihanna grabbed another lock pick from her kit, this one with a smoother bump on the end.
The elves make lenses that would help. Jewelers use them a lot. Sometimes they sell them to old rich humans whose eyes have started to fail.
Sure. I'll remember that next time I pass through an elven jeweler's shop.
Rihanna ignored him. She slid the pick in past Jig's fingers. Then she jerked it free. Nothing happened.
Too hard!
She tried again and again. The fourth time, it worked. The rod in Jig's hand turned, surprising him so much he dropped it. He winced, waiting for Rihanna's explosion. But that first quarter turn was enough. She picked up her tools and finished opening the lock.
Back up!
Once Jig was clear, she yanked the door open. Rihanna shot Barius a look comprised equally of smugness and annoyance.
Will there be anything more, Your Majesty?
Barius didn't answer. He stared in shock through the door into the room beyond. His lips moved without speaking. Jig peeked around the door, half afraid to see what monster awaited them. The door opened into a large, empty room. The floor and walls were made of the same black marble they had seen all along, but the ceiling was a familiar mosaic of tiled glass. In case Jig had any doubts about where they were, a pillar of whirling water stood at the center of the room. Of everyone in the party, Darnak appeared the most distraught. He shoved his way into the room and stared at the pillar. He counted the tiles of the floor and walls and compared his figures to the notes on his map. He studied the patterns in the ceiling, trying to persuade himself that they hadn't, in fact, come back to the very room where they first arrived.
147, 148... 149. How could I have been so far off?
Darnak spread his map on the floor to better study their path. Jig peered over his shoulder, looking at the winding tunnels that led from the center of the map, this room, through various tunnels and over what must be the bridge, to judge by the small bats Darnak had drawn, and finally to a door in the upper right corner of the map. Jig didn't know much about maps, but he knew that the door in the corner shouldn't have led them into the room in the center.
There's no way we got turned about that badly. Even if I were off 4 or 5 degrees in those turns. What a rotten trick that would be, using 85-degree turns instead of the solid right angles. I'll have to remember that when I get home. I could design a nasty maze that way. But we didn't even pass over the chasm a second time. And what happened to get your magic so clogged up, Riseland? You said you were taking us to the necromancer. Unless he's a wee fish swimming about in that column, I'm not seeing any necromancer here.
As I said before, this room was blocked to me. I thought it was the magic of the water that overwhelmed my spell, so I commanded the power to ignore this room and take me to the necromancer.
Darnak glanced down at his map once more.
Ah, hell.
So saying, he grabbed the map, crumpled it into a ball, and tossed it into the corner.
Getting cramps in my fingers anyway.
Is that all you have to offer me? 132 years of age, Silas Earthmaker at your side, and all you can do is complain of cramped fingers. As for you, my brother, what are we to make of your vaunted powers? Where is your otherworldly wisdom, great one? I was wrong to doubt you. How great your art must be that it led us back to the very spot from which we left!
What if he's right? What if the necromancer is here?
Ridiculous! He must be hidden away down some tunnel we neglected to explore. Only after defeating the minions do we face the master. It's what point to having minions at all?
Jig frowned. That was a good question. Maybe this was a good time to ask for help again.
Shadowstar, am I right? Why would the necromancer play with us like that? Maybe, well, the necromancer isn't a very nice person, right? Maybe he's doing this just to be mean, teasing us like animals before he kills us. He probably doesn't get much company here, you know. He probably gets lonely.
A master of the dark arts, lonely.
Is that the answer? But if so, that would mean the necromancer was here, watching us even as we argue. It probably laughed when we found ourselves back here, like it was the greatest joke in the world. But where is he watching from?
Jig's gut tightened, and sweat ran down his back as he looked around. The room was empty, as before. Nothing but the water. No place to hide. Even with magic, it would be difficult to hide in here, with the way the light bounced off the marble panels, illuminating every corner of the room. The panels! Jig stared. Like the panels in the hall that disappeared when those creatures had attacked.
He's behind the panels.
Are you sure?
Rysland raised his hands, fingers twisted to hurl a spell, but he could find no target. Marius's sword was drawn, and Arnak grabbed his club. From Jig's shoulder came the smell of singed leather as Smudge branded 8 dots onto his shoulder pad.
Very good, little goblin.
Show yourself, necromancer. Face us with honor and die like a man.
You've all done very well. I thought me warriors would finish you off in the hallway, but your wizard had more power than I expected. He's a fool, but a powerful one.
Rysland's eyes burned a deeper red at that. He said nothing.
Come, wizard. Find me if you can. I'm here, right beyond your grasp, waiting and laughing.
Can you find this villain?
Yes.
Why then do you delay?
No, that's what he wants!
Jig didn't know where the thought came from, and it was too late anyway. Rysland's fingers straightened. He turned toward one of the panels. Fire shot from his hands. Jig cringed and turned away as orange light brightened the room. Rysland's fingers curved and straightened again. Water shot forth, freezing instantly when it touched the wall. Rysland sent a second line of fire into its center. The panel fell to the floor in a dozen triangular pieces that shattered upon impact. Behind the steam and smoke, one of the dead warriors drew a sword and stepped forward. Rysland's lip curled into a sneer, and another blast of fire incinerated the corpse. Seconds later, only ashes remained.
You might try toning it down a little. Better to keep a bit of power in reserve just in case.
Rysland either didn't hear or didn't care. The flames that had destroyed the corpse moved to the next panel. Jig counted as fast as he could.
28 panels. I doubt if Rysland can keep up this kind of magic long enough to destroy them all.
Darnak appeared to have the same idea, for he was tugging Rysland's robe, trying to make him stop. The wizard brushed him away. This time, as Rysland fell, so did Darnak. But where the dwarf remained on the floor, clutching his head, Rysland stood back up as swiftly as he had fallen. The rest of the marble panels vanished, and 24 dead soldiers stepped into the room.
Excellent! You proved stronger than I had guessed, wizard.
To Jig's left, guarded by 2 well-armored corpses, stood a throne. Jig had never seen a real throne before, but this could be nothing else. No gold or gems decorated this chair. It had been carved from a single piece of stone, so black that even the marble looked bright by comparison. Light vanished into the throne, sucked into shadow. The legs formed claws, and the arms ended in small animal heads. Jig couldn't see well enough to identify them. The back of the throne rose to the top of the alcove, nearly 10 feet. The necromancer himself sat cross-legged upon purple cushions of velvet. In one hand, he held a long silver wand. Jig smirked. He couldn't help it. After all his fear, all the legends and songs about the terrible necromancer, this was not what he had imagined in his nightmares. For starters, Jig had expected him to be, well, taller. For another, a dark wizard shouldn't have large, gossamer wings. And didn't wizards wear robes? Granted, the necromancer's loose trousers and vest were both black, and his bare arms did have a pale, death-like pallor, but the effect was spoiled by the mop of brilliant blue hair that topped it all off.
He's a mere fairy.
That was the wrong thing to say. The necromancer stood up in the chair, pulling himself to his full height. Had he been on the floor, he would have been at eye level with the prince's knee. He waved his wand about like a sword.
A mere fairy, eh? And what's to keep this mere fairy from mastering the dark arts? I'll show you what real power is. I killed the old necromancer, you know.
He hopped down and ran at Barius. His dead bodyguards flanked him, weapons ready. Barius slipped back and raised his sword in a defensive stance, but the necromancer slid to a halt a few feet out of range.
This was his domain, but I took it away from him. Me, by myself. The others all died, but I lived long enough to cast a spell of dancing on him. He couldn't stop long enough to cast a spell, and that gave me time to put a knife in his eye. Horrid mess. Eye gook everywhere. Disgusting.
Lysland, destroy this pest.
Destroy him yourself, brother.
Jig froze, not even breathing. No longer did Rysland speak with two voices. The voice that remained was not Rysland's. Whatever had happened to the wizard when he overexerted himself, he was now as dangerous as the necromancer. Jig hoped the others realized it, because the last thing he was going to do was face either mage himself.
Take them!
The other creatures stepped out of their alcoves. Barius's head snapped one way, then another, as they closed in. Even human arrogance had limits. With Darnak unconscious, and his brother as great a danger as the necromancer, Barius had no choice. His sword slipped through limp fingers, and he raised his hands in surrender. Two creatures grabbed his arms and forced him to his knees. Others did the same with Rihanna and with Jig. They even grabbed Darnak's limp body and held him in a kneeling position. The necromancer strutted before them. He still had to look up to meet their eyes.
Very good. You see, Prince, your brother is, well, not himself today. If you're nice, I might even tell you who he is.
What do you want?
It's not about what I want. It's what he wants.
The necromancer nodded at Rysland. Then he smirked again.
Still nobody could complain if I kept one or two to replace a few of me toy soldiers. The dwarf, I think. He'll make a good warrior. And one other. The elf could be useful for the task ahead of you, but I see no reason for you to take the goblin. Leave him for me.
Dung! Why me? Why not her? Why does it always have to be the goblin?
You intrigue me, goblin. You were the one to figure out me little game. You were quite right, you know. Dreadfully lonely down here. Sometimes I summon one of me bats and play with it. But they die so quickly. With a lizard fish guarding the vortex, I rarely get to talk to anyone from above. I've even snuck into Strahm's domain a time or two, just for the company. You should be honored, little goblin. You'll be the first of your race to become one of me servants. I've humans and dwarves and even an elf or two. Though elves don't take too well to being dead.
Neither do I.
Despite his fear, Jig couldn't help but stare at the necromancer's blackened, rotten teeth. The necromancer couldn't help but notice. He shrugged.
Nothing much to eat down here. Had to make do on what I could conjure. And I'm afraid it wasn't all that healthy. Rotted the teeth right out of me head. What I wouldn't give for a crisp, juicy apple. Some days I think I'd trade all my power for one apple.
But without teeth, how would you eat it?
Shut up! You know nothing of the sacrifices I've made, stupid goblin. Within an hour, I'll give you a few sips from me beautiful fountain, and you'll never worry about anything again. But for me, there's always something to worry about. What if the magic wears off? What if a stronger mage comes after me? What if Strom comes to take me beautiful lair?
I don't think he'd fit. And doesn't Strom already have a lair of his own?
Oh, I suppose so. See? That's why I chose you. You're a smart one. Take the dwarf and the goblin to the fountain and drown them. That way, goblin, you'll be sure to swallow some of the potion as you die. I've tried a lot of ways, and trust me, this is the best. Why, once I even changed the man into a fish and dropped him into the fountain. It worked, but I wound up with an undead bass. It's no good, you know. You can't kill an undead bass. I took him out of the water, and he flopped about for hours and hours until I finally had one of me warriors stomp on the poor thing. Laughed for days about that one, I did.
What are you going to do with me? With us?
It's a surprise.
Unfair, Jig thought. Varys and the others would probably be taken prisoner, left in a dungeon somewhere until Rihanna helped them break out. Luck favored adventurers, while goblins got dragged off to be drowned.
Why me? Why am I the one to be kicked around by the prince? How did I end up with this doomed party, fighting dead warriors and eating bread? Why, in Shadowstar's name, can't things go right for me just this once?
Why, in my name, don't you quit whining and do something for yourself just this once?
Who said that?
What?
Smart for a goblin, that's what the little blue-haired one said, right? I see this is a relative thing.
Temulus Shadowstar?
Oh, well done. Perhaps there's hope after all. Still, a goblin follower. Have I really fallen this far? Well, what are you waiting for, goblin?
Jig.
What are you talking about, little goblin?
My name is Jig.
Jig! Why does everyone call me goblin? I'm Jig!
Jig squirmed and bit and kicked and tried to wiggle free, but the dead hands held him fast. His arms hurt where their fingers dug into his skin, and his shoulder was beginning to burn even through Smudge's leather pad.
Smudge!
Jig turned and pushed Smudge with his nose.
No!
Smudge clung to the pad even tighter when he realized what Jig was doing.
Please!
Jig pushed again, harder. Smudge came free and dropped onto the dead creature's arm. The necromancer didn't notice, and without orders, the creature continued to hold Jig, even as its skin blackened and burned.
What's the problem, goblin?
My name is Jig!
He bit down on the second corpse's hand and used his fangs to pry the fingers free. By now, the muscles of the first creature were on fire, and it was a simple matter to bend the hand back. Jig was loose. He whirled on the necromancer and drew his sword.
Jig! 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 Jig!
The fairy raised his wand. A line of yellow smoke shot out. Jig's vision sparkled, and his ankle flashed in pain.
Huh?
The necromancer stared at his wand. So did Jig, but only for a second. Then he leapt into the air, flailing about with his sword. The necromancer started to take to the air. Jig's blade slashed through one wing. As the necromancer fell, he raised his wand, and fire rushed into Jig's face. Again, Jig's ankle felt like it had exploded. He lunged blindly. On the ground in front of him, the necromancer stared in disbelief at the sword sticking out of his belly. He had dropped his wand, and both hands gingerly touched the blade, as if he couldn't believe it was real. Only Jig was close enough to hear the necromancer's final tormented words.
Boy! Goblin!
Jig stepped on the fairy's chest and pulled his sword free. He turned to face the others. The necromancer was dead. That left only 24 dead warriors and a possessed wizard. Jig grinned like a madman and waved his sword.
Who's next?
24 dead faces stared at him. Rihanna's mouth hung open in shock, and Varys looked every which way as he tried to comprehend what had happened. Rhysland's red eyes swept over the necromancer's body, then locked onto Jig. He did not look happy. Jig could think of only one thing to do. He prayed.
That was great! Thank you so much! What now?
I don't know. I didn't expect you to live through it.
Oh.
Some of Jig's elation drained off at that, but not all. What had Shadow Star said? Quit whining and do something for yourself for once. And he had. He had slain the necromancer. Sure, the necromancer looked harmless now. A dead fairy bleeding a puddle onto the floor. But that fairy had been the necromancer, a 2-foot-tall master of death with hideous blue hair. The point was, Jig had done it, not Barius or Darnak. It was all he could do not to giggle. He spun to face Risland. The dead creatures hadn't moved, which made Risland the next threat to be faced. The wizard smiled, and the ground beneath Jig fell away. No, he was floating. Even as he watched, the room started to spin, and his ankle throbbed. He stood back up with a grimace, rubbing his bruised posterior. So much for the dramatic hero.
What have you done? Where did you find this protection?
Protection? Jig remembered the pain that had come as each of the necromancer's spells failed. He looked down at his ankle. Inside his boot, he saw the bracelet he had taken from the skeleton in the hallway. That bracelet must protect him from magic. That was why the necromancer hadn't been able to stop him. That must be why the skeleton had stayed dead while all the others had come back to fight. The necromancer must have turned the bracelet's former owner into another dead guard, and there had been just enough magic for him to walk to his alcove. There, the spell had worn off, and he had died for real. What a marvelous find! Jig was safe from magic. He looked up. Safe from magic, but not from his own foolishness. While he had been figuring out how the bracelet worked, Risland had strung his bow. He had an arrow knocked to the string, pointed at Jig's chest. His eyes fell on Jig's boot.
What have you got there, goblin?
Jig. It's a bracelet I found.
Let me have it.
Jig saw movement behind Risland. If he could keep the wizard distracted, maybe someone would help him. He sat down and pulled at the boot.
I see you, brother. So please do not try anything foolhardy.
Risland nodded over his shoulder. Barius flew through the air and into the wall. Jig started to go for his sword, but even though Risland wasn't looking, the bow followed his movements.
That's a dangerous idea, goblin.
That wasn't Risland. His body, yes, but not him.
Who are ye?
One who searches for the rod, the same as all of you. Now give me that bracelet.
Jig went back to wrestling with his boot. He could have slipped it off easily, but he wanted time to think, and as long as Risland hadn't noticed how over-large the boots were, Jig could continue to stall. Barius was helpless, pinned against the wall. Rihanna was still free, but as soon as she moved, she joined Barius. Jig's eyes fell upon the necromancer's silver wand.
You're delaying.
I'm trying!
Perhaps you need help.
Risland didn't appear to do anything, but suddenly the necromancer's guards were closing around him. Jig's eyes widened. Risland wasn't supposed to be able to control them. They were the necromancer's creatures.
I've got it!
Jig hastily ripped off his boot and grabbed the bracelet. The skin of his ankle was a bit blackened. Still, better another burn than to end up like those mindless corpses.
Throw it here.
Jig obeyed. He threw as hard as he could and dove out of the way. Risland ducked as Jig's boot sailed past his face. The creatures walked closer. Jig snatched the necromancer's wand and scampered back. Something buzzed past his face, probably an arrow. Trying not to think about how close that shot had come, he thrust the wand through the center of the bracelet. Collapsed. Another victory for Jig. Risland's next arrow slammed into Jig's shoulder like a fist, spinning him in a complete circle. He tried to push himself back up, but his arms wouldn't work. His cheek was wet and sticky.
What's that blue stuff on the floor? Oh, right. That's my blood.
Jig lay there and waited for Risland to finish him. A hand rolled him over, and he found himself looking into Darnak's bushy face. He tried to say something. But at that moment, the pain increased tenfold. The dwarf had rolled him onto the arrow.
Hold on, lad. The arrow was barbed, so I'm needing to break off the end. This is going to hurt.
Going to hurt?
Through teary eyes, Jig tried to see what was happening. He saw Darnak's hand close around the back of the arrow. The shaft snapped. The world went white for an instant. Darnak placed a hand over Jig's shoulder. Someone else pulled the broken arrow through his back. Jig felt nauseous as he realized that he had a hole passing all the way through his body.
What happened?
Darnak clubbed Riceland on the head. With all those creatures bawling, he got so angry that he stopped paying attention to the rest of us. He's tired and gagged, so we should be safe when he wakes up.
Oh, that's good.
Darnak tapped Jig's shoulder lightly with his hammer amulet. His head felt tingly.
Have him drink this.
Darnak handed a water skin to Rihanna, who put it to Jig's lips. His mouth felt parched, and he sucked eagerly. That wasn't water. Darnak had passed over his wineskin. In other circumstances, Jig would have been stunned by the gesture.
Here now, don't be wasting it. It's good stuff, and I can't get more until my cousin returns from down south.
Darnak grabbed the skin and took a swig for himself.
Care to take another shot at it?
This time, Jig forced himself to swallow, even though it made his throat burn and his eyes water even harder. He felt vapor rise into his sinuses, making his head light. The pain in his shoulder was still there, but somehow it didn't matter quite as much. Darnak grinned.
Dwarven ale. Made in the finest underground breweries in the land.
Tastes like clock beer.
Watch your tongue. This is fine dwarven drink. No race in the world can match it. Least of all goblins.
Well, this needs to age more.
You need to rest.
Jig smiled as the dwarf worked on his shoulder. This was more like it. Rihanna was watching him with, well, not exactly respect, but at least without her usual loathing. Darnak was healing him, just like he had done for Barius. And for the first time in Jig's recollection, probably the first time since the world was born, a dwarf had shared a drink with a goblin. Rihanna pressed something into Jig's mouth. He chewed automatically. They should have known it was too good to be true. First, they treated him like a friend. Then they tried to feed him bread.
Eat it. You'll need your strength.
What else could he do? He didn't want to offend the one who was closing the hole in his shoulder. So he forced himself to chew and swallow. He took small bites. That way, he didn't have to chew as much, and the dusty aftertaste didn't linger as long.
Where's Barius?
With his brother. They hate each other, but neither wants to see the other die. Not unless it's by their own hand, that is. Strange and tragic, but true. Well, that's it. Best I can do, but a mite better than I'd hoped. You'll have an ugly scar, and a matching one on the back. Don't strain that left arm anytime soon, either. But you'll live. At least until the next time you go picking fights with two wizards in one day.
Darnak helped Jig to sit up. Smudge had rejoined him at some point, and now scooted to his normal spot on Jig's shoulder.
Good spider.
Jig tried to stand, but his head spun. He decided maybe it would be better to stay on the floor and not move for a while. Yes, that would be for the best. He perked his ears, even his ears hurt, and listened as Darnak joined Barius.
So how's his wizardness doing?
My brother will survive. A fortunate thing for you, Darnak. Even striking a prince is an offense worthy of death. Had you killed him, you would have left me no choice but to execute you.
Aye. And then you'd have left me no choice but to box your ears. Would you rather I let him kill us all, then? Come on, we've got to be finding a way out of here. Maybe if we get him back home, your father's advisors will have some ideas for restoring his mind.
What do you mean, leave? Our quest is unfinished, Darnak.
Aye, and your brother the wizard has lost his mind. Or were you forgetting that? He's beyond my power to help, Your Majesty. How are you planning to finish your quest without Riseland?
It is my quest. My brother has experienced these fits of weakness before. He shall recover in time.
Fits of weakness, are they? This is the first time he's been shooting members of his own party, and he wasn't too weak to toss you about, was he?
That goblin is no member of my party.
Oh, is that so? Then I suppose he should have left the necromancer alive for you to kill.
Your tone borders dangerously close to treason, Darnak.
Perhaps, Majesty. I'm only trying to do my job and keep you alive.
You are my tutor no longer. You have brought for your skill at arms, your experience in the bowels of the mountains, and your gift for cartography. If you find yourself unable to restrict yourself to these duties, you may wait here for my return.
Where are you going? And what's a cartographer?
Barius turned his back on the dwarf and ran his hands over the arms of the throne.
I am departing this accursed place.
Barius tugged at the top of the throne. Nothing happened, so he ripped out the cushions and began to poke and prod at the seat.
There may be a concealed passageway by the throne.
And how would you know that?
Common sense. At any time, a ruler could find himself in need of a quick escape route. That truth is even more common for black-hearted lords such as this necromancer, whose enemies are many. What better place to make your escape than through the throne itself?
Is there a hidden door behind your father's throne?
Of course not. My father is beloved by his subjects and has no need to plan for escape. Behold! The throne itself moves. Darnak, help me to shift it back.
The dwarf lent his bulk to the task. Brianna walked closer, curious. Slowly, the great throne scraped back a few inches. Apparently, Barius had been correct this time. The floor around the throne vanished. Darnak and Barius tried to cling to the now floating throne, but couldn't find handholds. Jig had one glimpse of Rihanna's face before she fell. Jig crawled to the edge of the hole. Darnak had set the lantern on the floor next to the throne. When the floor vanished, the lantern had followed the others into the pit, leaving Jig blind. He moved slowly and tested every inch of the floor as he went. Jig's attention was drawn away from the pit. Risland was awake and laughing. Though the rag Darnak had tied into his mouth muffled the sound, the light from his eyes gave his face a demonic red tinge.
They're going to die down there.
Risland's voice spoke in Jig's head. No, not Risland, but the second voice. The voice of whatever had taken control of the wizard.
Fools and children. Strahm will slaughter you all like insects.
Furious, Jig walked over to him.
Why is everyone suddenly speaking in my mind? Am I now to endure Risland's babble as well?
Not for much longer, little goblin.
Jig's eyes narrowed. The faint light from Risland's eyes gave him just enough illumination. He grabbed the ropes around the wizard's ankles and dragged him over to the pit. His shoulder ached, but Darnak had done a good job, and his wound remained closed. Jig looked into Risland's glowing eyes, and for the first time, he didn't flinch away from that dark red light.
The only escape is to fall on that sword of yours.
Jig shoved him into the pit. Then he sat down with his legs dangling over the edge and tried to figure out what he should do next.
Which tile was it?
Walking along the corridor, Jig slid his sword along the floor until it hit the slight dip that marked the edge of a tile. He tapped the next one with his sword. One of these had opened the walls. They had killed most of the creatures here the first time they triggered the trap, so if Jig set it off again, it should be safe. He hoped. Besides, the necromancer's wand was destroyed. This was probably the safest place in the whole mountain. He had to get out of here. He couldn't go up, not unless he had a way to swim through the whirlpool and avoid the lizardfish. Even if Timula's Shadow Star decided to help him again, Jig doubted he could manage that much. Which left down. He would have to follow the others. After putting his boots back on, he had felt around for his bracelet, but the metal had melted into the wand. He tucked the glob of metal into his belt as a souvenir in case he ever got home. The other goblins would never believe it was the necromancer's wand, but it would be a good keepsake nonetheless. The other thing he wanted was light.
A lantern, a torch, even a candle would be a godsend.
Jig held his breath, thinking Shadow Star might take the hint, but no candle appeared in his hand. He kept walking. The 13th tile shifted beneath his sword. The faint whiff of preservative and dust drifting into the air told him the alcoves had opened again. He stepped into the alcove where he had hidden with Rihanna. The noose should be to his right. Jig hoped he would be able to use the rope to lower himself into the pit.
The panel, dummy!
Jig jerked up indignantly.
What? The panel? Oh, no!
Jig leaped for the hallway. He made it through.
Oh, phew.
He felt like he had leaped through an icy waterfall, but he was out.
That was stupid. I could have died!
Once his hands no longer shook, he opened the panel again. This would be tricky, even were he able to see. Snagging the rope and pulling it out in the darkness was next to impossible. He experimented for a while to find out exactly how long he had before the panel closed. It would remain open for a little more than 2 breaths after he touched the floor or wall of the alcove. Plenty of time to reach in, holding his sword by the blade, and drag the crossguard across the floor toward him. All he had to do was catch the rope. He pulled out at least half of the skeleton in assorted bits and pieces before he managed to snag the noose. Once he had rope in hand, he hurried back to the necromancer's throne room. The rope measured 7 feet once Jig untied the knot. It consisted of 3 cords twisted together, and Jig guessed that any one of those cords would hold his weight. It took a while to get the cords unraveled. In the end, Jig held a thin rope about 20 feet long. He tugged on the 2 knots that bound the cords end to end. They didn't give. Satisfied, he tied a loop in one end and tried to toss it over the arm of the throne. Looping the arm of a floating throne in pitch blackness would have challenged even the most coordinated of heroes. Jig took close to an hour before the rope caught. He began to lower himself into the pit. The plan would have worked, except for the cut on his hand. Jig followed his companions into the darkness. He landed on his backside on something springy and damp. The sunlight blinded him. After so long in silence, the noises greeted Jig like a long-lost friend. Birds in Straum's lair. Sparrows and other birds flew into the tunnels from time to time. They made great snacks. Perhaps there was a crack leading to the surface, small enough for birds to fly in and out.
Jig! Is that you? We were wondering if you'd be joining us.
Darnak? It was either fall you down or stay there and starve.
Good choice. Since you're here, mayhaps you can help us with a bit of a dilemma. See, this isn't exactly what we were expecting to find down here.
They waited for Jig's eyes to adjust.
Oh!
He looked around in amazement. He sat in a field of soft green grass. Trees ringed the field at a distance of roughly 100 yards. Sunlight warmed his skin. He scraped at the damp ground, digging up a clump of grass to find not cold stone, but moist black soil.
I'm outside.
Jig raised a hand and saw his shadow on the ground. It didn't waver, as it would have done in torchlight. Clear and sharp, his shadow hand followed his real one perfectly. Slowly, Jig looked up at the sky.
Wow!
As he stared, Jig saw no sign of the rope he had used to climb down. Nothing but blue sky and clouds like white clumps of fur drifting past. He reached out, but the clouds were too far away to touch. They looked to be at least 30 or 40 feet up, higher than anything Jig had ever seen. And the sun! An orange circle that shone with warm, perfect light, like 1,000,000 torches all burning together. He squinted, trying to see if it burned like a normal fire.
It's not real. If it were, you'd be blind right about now.
Jig ignored him. Real or not, this was the most incredible thing he had ever seen. After spending his whole life underground, knowing nothing but the lair and a few dark tunnels, Jig had discovered a completely new world.
It's so big!
I take it then that you wouldn't be knowing how to find the dragon.
Jig shook his head. Nobody had ever described anything like this place.
It's an illusion. The sun's too orange, and I can only see one kind of tree.
How many kinds of trees are there?
Hundreds! Thousands! Oaks as proud as the gods! Willows that sway and dance in the wind! There are trees with leaves as pointed as rapiers, and trees that need rain but once every 6 months to survive. I've even seen trees only a foot tall that mimic their larger cousins in every way.
Elves and trees. Something unnatural about their love for plants. Besides, I thought you were a city type. Where'd you learn about trees?
I spent a month hiding out in an arboretum behind the monastery of Batoth.
Don't tell me the details. I'm still the prince's man, and I'd not like to be arresting you the second we leave this mountain. So, Jig, how is it that you've never seen the outdoors?
I just haven't.
Darnak, come and see this.
Darnak and the others hurried over to join the prince. On the way, Jig noticed the tied and bruised body of the wizard stretched out in the grass. Risland glared at him as he passed, and Jig glanced away quickly. He hoped they wouldn't untie Risland anytime soon. 100 years should be long enough. Barius stood over the huge body of an ogre.
Oh!
Jig grabbed for his sword when he saw it, but the ogre wasn't moving. To judge by the deep slashes across its chest and throat, it would never move again. He noticed that Darnak's hand had also gone to his weapon.
You did this, lad?
Not I.
Barius knelt and pointed to the cuts on the chest.
3 deep cuts, all in a row. A 4th scraped the skin here.
Claws. Aye, I see it. But what beast could best an ogre?
A good question, Jig thought as he stared at the body. He had never seen an ogre, and now he prayed he would never see a living example. It must have stood over 8 feet high, with muscular arms as long as Jig was tall. Its calloused green skin looked tough enough to serve as light armor. Ragged black hair topped a long oval head. The teeth, while shorter than goblin teeth, still looked sharp enough to do serious damage. The huge mouth meant the ogre had a lot more of them, too. Something shiny caught Jig's eye. A battle axe, 6 feet long and double-headed, lay discarded in the grass to one side. Jig bent down and grabbed the handle to take it back to the others. The axe didn't budge. Off balance, Jig stumbled to the ground.
I found something!
Darnak approached. Darnak could lift it, but he needed both hands to raise it in the air, and Jig doubted even the dwarf could swing such an axe in a fight.
You think he was waiting for whoever fell through?
If so, then whatever slew the beast has my gratitude.
Aye, so long as it's not coming back for dessert, that is.
Strange, though. Whatever killed the ogre wasn't interested in food. A kill such as this would feed an animal for days. Why, then, did it not at least drag the ogre off for safekeeping? Unless it was a territorial dispute, perhaps.
Barius pointed to a patch of grass behind Rihanna.
The tracks lead back to the center of the field.
Jig stared at the grass. It looked green, the same as everything else down here.
Spread out. Search for anything unusual.
They retraced their path.
100 feet underground, in a fake field beneath a fake sky, with an ogre slaughtered like no more than a rat to a cat, and he sends us to search for the unusual.
They found 2 more ogres. Together with the first corpse, the bodies formed a rough triangle around the spot where the adventurers had appeared.
Ambush?
Most likely. By the time we recovered from the fall and drew our weapons, they would have been upon us. Even if you and I could stand against such beasts, they still outnumbered us.
The pit was a trap. Anyone who beat the necromancer was supposed to die here. Sizing up the 2-handed sword one ogre had dropped, Jig tried not to think about how long he would last in a fight against ogres, let alone whatever beast had killed them. Barius pointed to the wounds on the 3rd ogre.
Whatever did this, it killed this one last. It left for the woods in this direction. We should follow.
What?
This way, we are the hunters instead of the prey. Better this than to sit and wait for it to creep up on us in the night, wouldn't you say?
Maybe it only kills ogres.
It pains me to be saying it, but His Highness could be right. Until we know the dangers of this place, we'll be as children walking blindly into the bear's cave.
Know thy enemy, eh, Darnak?
What about the rod?
We can't pursue the rod with this monster at our heels. Nor do we know in which direction the rod may lie. We could be here for days, so it behooves us to learn as much as we can about this land.
Jig pointed at Risland.
And him?
Though the gag hid his mouth, the corners of the wizard's eyes had wrinkled with amusement as he watched Barius's preparations.
You know what it is, don't you?
Risland heard. The wrinkles deepened. Red eyes beckoned Jig closer. He crossed the clearing, one hand on his sword. With his other hand, he reached for the gag. He hesitated, hand outstretched.
Is this another trick?
Course it was a trick. Risland was a surface dweller, and a wizard to boot. Smudge remained cool on his shoulder, which should mean it was safe to remove the gag. Still, he hesitated.
I'll kill you if you try any magic.
Risland dipped his head in amused acknowledgement.
As will I. I was coming to get him. Heard you talking. So go ahead, remove the gag. He knows we'll brain him if it comes to that.
Feeling more confident with the dwarf beside him, Jig tugged the rope down around Risland's chin and pulled a bald rag out of his mouth.
You will die for what you did, goblin.
Enough of that. You were telling us about the thing that did this. Or was that all a ploy to get free of the gag?
No ploy. And there is no need to hunt for him. He will find you soon enough.
He?
He is one of Straum's servants.
How would you know this, brother? What reason do we have for trusting your word?
Believe me or not, it makes no difference.
They untied Rislin's legs so he could walk with the party. As they reached the woods, it looked like Risland would keep his promise. He had not spoken a word, and his hands remained bound behind his back. Darnak walked at the end of their line so he would see if Risland tried anything. So far, Risland had been content to follow along. He still made Jig nervous, especially the way he smiled at them, like this was all a game, and only Risland knew the rules.
The trail goes deeper into the woods. See here. The creature has left a partial print.
Jig stared at the brown, scuffed dirt. He saw nothing and wondered if Barius was hallucinating.
The print is deep, so I would guess we face a beast nearly as massive as the ogre's. A lion, perhaps, but longer of tail. Come, let us continue.
Jig waited for the others to pass by. He took an extra step back to let Risland go by, but the wizard only smiled at him. Jig fell into step beside Darnak.
Are both of them mad? They prod one another like children. And the only reason we're chasing this beast is because Barius refuses to back down in front of his brother. What's wrong with them?
Earthmaker only knows what has happened to Risland. As for Barius, I'm afraid he sees the competition as being more important than the rest. Even more important than his own life. Barius has competed all his life, and he's always lost. He's the seventh son of King Wendell. That means he's got no more chance to sit on that throne than you or I do, and he knows it. Even with three of his brothers dead on their manhood quests, he's no more than an extra mouth to feed around the palace. A noble mouth, mind you, but still a burden. Sooner or later they'll marry him off, give him a nice little plot of land somewhere out of the way, and forget he ever existed.
He grew up with his parents?
Aye. What of it?
Isn't that inefficient? To rely so much on the parents, I mean.
Well, for a dwarven family, it would make no difference. For us, family is everything. Parents, cousins, grandparents, brothers and sisters, all of them squeeze together in one home and look after one another. But for Prince Barius, his parents were always busy ruling Ardenkar. He grew up surrounded by servants and tutors, none of whom saw him as anything but one more spoiled Wendelson to care for. He's quite a lonely boy, really. Most of the sons are. They began very early to compete for their parents' attention. Barius fought in tournaments from the time he was 13. He learned the lute, studied every book he could get a hold of, and once stayed out 3 nights in a row to catch a wolf that had been stalking the stables. It was never enough. The quake that finally collapsed his tunnel was Risland. Risland set out one day and didn't come back for 2 months. All of Ardenkar searched for the lost prince, but he'd vanished like shadows at midday. Rumors spread and multiplied faster than fleas on a beggar. Raistlin had been abducted by elves. He'd been drowned in the Serpent River. He had run off to be with his spirit lover. Everyone had a different tale. Barius didn't know what to believe, but he saw his chance for glory. He declared that he would bring his brother back. Interrupted court to make his pronouncement and made sure everyone heard. He spent a week in preparation, gathering horses and supplies and men and maps. Everything he thought he'd need. And then Raistlin returned. Walked into the throne room just as calm and confident as ever. He had completed his quest, he told us. To demonstrate, he sent tiny bolts of blue lightning racing across the ceiling, levitated his eldest brother into the air and left him there, shrieking like a banshee. Before, he struggled even to learn simple tricks and sleight of hand, but somehow, in those 2 months, he had become a master of his art. Barius was devastated. His brother, 2 years his junior, had outshone him. His heroic preparations made him look even more the fool. A year ago, that was. Then some idiot gave him the idea to go after the Rod of Creation. I wish I could get my hands on the fellow who suggested it. Everyone thought it was suicide, but for Barius, it was the only thing that could surpass his brother's.
By this point, Jig was listening with only one ear. Darnak's story simply confirmed his belief that the prince was mad. Given a place to live, food to eat, even people to wait on him and make sure his every wish was taken care of, Barius wanted more. He had to prove himself. Jig turned his attention to the forest. Rihanna had complained that the trees weren't real, but Jig didn't care. He had never seen anything like them. Brown trunks, thick as his waist, rose 100 feet into the air. Finally, the sunlight faded to orange, then red.
Halt!
Barius pointed to a large pair of trees.
We make camp here. Rihanna, you and the goblin will gather wood for a fire while Darnak and I discuss a plan for dispatching the dragon Straum.
Jig kept an ear cocked back as they searched for firewood. The trees looked alike. The ground was the same everywhere. He glanced into the sky and received another shock. The sun had moved. Before, it had been directly overhead, but in the past few hours, it had traveled to the very edge of the sky. Rihanna stopped to watch a bird circle overhead. When she didn't move, Jig looked up as well. Following the wide flight made him dizzy, and he wondered if real birds ever felt nauseous.
I wonder what it's like.
I'm sure it's great. You can fly anywhere, right up until some hunter turns his trained falcon loose to break your back and bring you down.
Rihanna stomped off, Jig following close behind to make sure he didn't lose sight of her. So much for birds. When she began to gather wood, he picked a tree at random and drew his sword. Jig chopped at one of the lower branches. The impact jolted his fingers and forearm. Trees were tougher than he thought. He drew back for another swing.
What are you doing?
Getting wood.
Ugh, a fat lot of good that'll do. You don't use green wood for a fire unless you want to make a smoke tail.
A what?
A smoke tail. A signal humans use to let one another know where they're at. I don't think we want to announce ourselves to the dragon quite yet, do you?
Jig stared at the tree.
Ugh.
Rihanna dropped her small pile of sticks.
Put that away.
When Jig's sword was safely back in its sheath, Rihanna pointed to the branch he had cut.
See the sap?
Jig squinted. By putting his face 3 inches from the branch, he could make out a few drops of clear liquid oozing out of the cut.
That's because the branch is still alive. It's wet inside, so it won't burn. Gather the branches that have died and fallen off. The drier the better.
Rihanna picked up one branch and broke it in half.
See? No sap. I'm amazed you goblins haven't suffocated yourselves if you don't know enough to use dry wood.
There aren't many trees in the upper tunnels.
Jig gave the tree a disgusted look and began to grab sticks from the ground.
What do you burn for fuel?
Elves.
Jig dropped his sticks and grabbed his sword.
Did you hear that?
Rihanna shook her head. She did draw her dagger, though, and Jig saw fear in her eyes as she scanned the woods.
We could get killed out here.
Barius probably wants us to get killed. If we die, that's two problems he doesn't have to deal with anymore. It sounds big.
Jig felt naked and exposed with no walls around him. He backed toward a large tree. The tree was a poor substitute for hard stone, but at least it would guard his back. The beast charged.